This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. Pitching, whether it's a script or a project or a story, pretty much pitching anything, is a complicated business. Now, my usual system is to tell a story, either the story that I'll be telling in the script or the story that inspired the story I'll be telling in the script or just the pilot story. But everybody's got their own way. I know writers who rehearse elaborate presentations, script it all down to the last moment, have PowerPoint decks, and I also know some who just walk in with a general outline and just wing it. But all those pitches, they all end up the same way. You wrap up your pitch and there's a pause. Rarely these days do you get a nod and a handshake and a let's make this together kind of thing. Rarely, in other words, do you what we call sell it in the room. Show business is now so clogged and cluttered with executives that a pitch often has to be transcribed and then distilled and turned into a four-sentence logline, which is then sent up the chain for final approval, usually in some slightly altered way, so that if the project is bought, something very different will appear in a few weeks and disappoint, you know, everybody, including the writer. And if it's not bought, there will be a lingering sense from all involved, including the writer, that maybe somehow everybody just didn't understand the pitch. But nobody wants to admit that, of course, because nobody wants to admit that most of what we do in this business, which is a place where there are billions of dollars at stake, most of what we do is just muddle through and make ridiculous errors and pretend to know what we're talking about when we honestly have zero idea what we're talking about. So you pitch to whoever is there to hear it, and you pretend that whoever that is can buy it in the room. And you do that because that's what you do. That's what we do. That's what everybody does. That's how it works. You know, why it works that way and how to change that, that's an interesting existential question, really. Because when you get right down to it, you know, all meetings are useless. All executives are doomed, basically. And any pitch can get sucked into that sticky, sweet-smelling development dumpster. I had a pitch meeting scheduled once with an executive at a network who was almost assuredly about to be replaced. I mean, everybody knew this exec was on the way out, except, you know, probably that executive, because it does always seem like they are taken by surprise when this kind of thing happens. But I had a meeting on the books and I wanted to know how to play it. I mean, do I pitch to the on the way out exec? Do I claim to be sick and cancel and reschedule for a few weeks later when the change would have been made? So I called an older, wiser agent friend of mine for advice, and I put the dilemma to him, and he sighed the sigh of a very rich, well, no, actually a very, very rich man. You know what I'd tell you? He asked richly. What? I said. I'd tell you to shut up and pitch, he said wealthily. Really? Even to an exec on the way out? Yeah. Look, you go in there and you salute the uniform, okay? I mean, what do you care who's wearing it? They put a monkey in the uniform, you salute the monkey. And then he hung up with great affluence. Look, everybody knows the old sales rule, which is never to pitch to somebody who can't say yes. But these days, almost no one can say yes. So what they say, what they all say, when you've wrapped up your pitch and are looking around expectantly, what they say is this. Fun stuff. Let us talk internally, and we'll get back to you. Fun stuff. Let us talk internally. Meaning, thanks for coming in for this kabuki exercise. It was fun, but now we need to send this to our bosses and tell them that it's either exactly what we all agreed we were looking for at the last creative team retreat, or more likely, it's fun stuff, but let's wait and see if anyone else in town thinks it's fun stuff too, and then we can see who thinks it's funner stuff. Fun stuff, it's a way of being gentle and noncommittal to the writer. Your idea is fun, we just need to talk about it. But it never sounds like they thought it was funny when they say fun stuff. It always sounds like they're just being nice and grasping for something, anything to say that is both cheerful sounding and totally opaque. Fun stuff, though, perfectly reflects the awkward and unclear place the entertainment business is in as a whole, where no one knows what exactly they're looking for, and no one knows what exactly success looks like, and really nobody knows what fun is. After a season of confusing and disappointing box office returns and a TV business that's fractured and atomizing and difficult to find the gold in, it must be hard to hear an idea and think, this one I can get behind. It's much easier and probably much safer in career terms to say, fun stuff, let us talk internally and we'll get back to you. Because after all, in the TV business, in all of show business, that is exactly what the viewers are saying, basically. Now, each year around this time, I throw a big, noisy party in my apartment in New York. And each year, as I plan the guest list and order the food and drinks and generally fret about the arrangements, I try to keep the following story in mind. Years ago, when an older friend of mine moved to New York City from Iowa, his sophisticated man-about-towned uncle gave him some advice. Within the first 6 months of your arrival, his uncle told him, throw a party. After 6 months in the city, his uncle reasoned, my friend would have met enough people to fill his apartment during the cocktail party hours of 5 and 8. Remember, this was back in the days when people actually had cocktail parties with drinks and cigarettes and tipsy after-work flirtations. This was like in the 70s, right? His uncle told him that the key to being invited to parties is to throw one of your own, and the whole point of moving to New York City in the first place is to be invited to parties, so don't waste any time planning the first bash. My friend thanked his uncle for his advice, but he wasn't sure he could pull it off. What if nobody comes, he asked. His uncle answered, in New York City, people show up for free drinks. Besides, his uncle explained, the best thing about a cocktail party is that it comes with its own time limit. By 8 o'clock, people are shuffling off to their own dinner plans or making them on the spot with a new acquaintance. Just be ready at 5 o'clock to receive guests, he was told, because people in New York love any excuse to leave work early. And it all sounded just way too expensive to my friend, who was a young attorney just out of law school. But his uncle had an answer for that, too. Buy the cheapest liquor you can find. Set it out on a table with mixers and cups, whatever you have. Mixed up, coffee mugs, doesn't matter. Plenty of ice. Get a big supermarket ham and glaze the hell out of it and heat it up and serve it with rye bread and mustard and you are done. It didn't seem glamorous, and certainly not glamorous enough for New York sophisticates, my friend said, but his uncle waved that concern off too. People, he said, with the confidence of a man who had cut a swath through New York City society in the 1950s, people are simple creatures. They just want to be invited someplace. They just want to meet some new people, have some fun, get a little loose after work, eat a sandwich. People, he said, even really fancy people, maybe even especially fancy people, they don't want fancy. They want fun. Invite everyone, he said. Don't compose a guest list. Don't worry about who might get along with whom. Just pile them all in the room with enough liquor and something to eat and then just let it rip. Now, my friend tells the story of his first cocktail party, remember, in the 70s, executed with strict adherence to his uncle's directives, and it was a smash hit. And from his description, it was a little like that packed cocktail party scene in the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's. You remember that? Just without the broken glass or the totally racist depiction of the Japanese upstairs neighbor played with buck teeth and Coke bottle glasses by Mickey Rooney. I mean, if you haven't seen it, trigger warning. Anyway, the place was filled with laughter and cigarette smoke. This was 1972. Nobody noticed or cared that the liquor was bottom shelf, that the ham was oddly shaped or covered in weird pineapple slices, because nobody ever does, his uncle reminded him later. The party was a success, but it also accomplished the larger mission, which was to get my friend invited to a lot of other parties, to embroil him in a few disastrous love affairs, and eventually, a few years later, to introduce him to his future wife, who it turns out had actually been at his apartment for that very first party. But in the crush of guests and comings and goings, she never got the chance to meet her host. And I tell myself this story every year, because as I plan a party of my own, I need to remember that the best parties are a little unruly, a little too full, and decidedly low rent when it comes to food and drink. That's true of parties, but it's probably true about life in general when you think about it. A little unruly, a little too full, low rent when it comes to food and drink. In other words, at this party, I am not looking for fun stuff. I'm going for fun, which is what partygoers and audiences are also looking for. And when we overthink it, we ruin the party. When we talk internally, we end up talking ourselves out of a great thing or into a bad thing, but we never end up actually having fun. And if we could somehow get back to that single one-line question, is this fun? We might restart the fire of show business, which when it's working, feels like a big, loud, unruly party with everybody having a great time and no one really caring how cheap the liquor is. And that's it for this week. Next week, we will get faith-based. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.